anyone else want to share just quickly where you're at? Is there anyone
who's
feeling wonderful? Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, it's Dara from New York.
Hi.
So I feel periods of being up and down. You know, as you may know, I actually submitted a question about Hurricane Sandy.
So I'm
living in this place that feels so surreal at times, like our whole world was shaken up. But at times I feel calmness and I feel empowered, but at other times I'm surrounded by this complete devastation and I'm watching people around me, you know, who lost homes and, you know, property and things like that. And I can't help but be affected by that and wonder what, you know, what this means in terms of the shift. You know, there are times when I feel grounded and really good and direction, you know, having direction and fulfilling my purpose, but there are other times where I feel like I'm just completely, you know, ungrounded.
Right. Understood. Thank you for sharing that. Is there another one or two people who would like to share where you're at? And by the way, I just want to, before you do, perhaps I should have said this at the beginning. This is a matrix event. In this particular case, I'm not having a number of presenters. I'm just going to be presenting. But when it comes to a matrix event, the matrix is the substance in which we are all moving, the substance from which our lives are all being generated. And we're going to touch on that in our connection and throughout the call. So when you are sharing something, or when you're experiencing something in this call, or when I'm sharing something, or when anyone else is sharing something, it's not that we're learning or talking about things. We are in those things. All of those things are in the matrix. We're bringing them into our field, and then we want to bring light to all of those things. So that's the reason why I'm actually taking the time to ask people to share a little bit about what's going on. So thanks. Anybody else?
Shifra, it's Wilma from Ottawa. I have to say, for me, I'm kind of like in the middle. I've been feeling very scattered, but the weirdest thing is today, for some reason, I feel a lot of anticipation, which I think is a positive thing.
Yes. Okay. Very good. Thank you. All right. So we have more on the shaken side than so far on the grounded side, but some people more in the middle. And I just want to share, Roxanne wrote into the, from Port of Spain, wrote into the webcast, "I find it hard to be the whole of me when trials and turbulence absorb me. How can we be all of us in the midst of the turbulence?" That's an awesomely good question. One more. Is there one more? One more person want to share where you are?
Hi, this is Gloria from Massachusetts.
Hi, Gloria.
And I'm feeling all of the above. I'm feeling scattered and ungrounded and a lot of sadness in my heart.
Mm.
Not knowing what the next step is.
Sorry about this noise, you guys. I will be muting the call in a second. Don't get upset. So you said you feel scattered, and I had a little bit of hard time hearing the last thing that you said.
Yeah, not knowing what the next step is. You know,
not knowing what the next step is. Okay.
Yeah, and I really, really appreciate this call today. You know, because I just feel like I'm here, but I feel like I'm not here grounded. That groundness is really, really hard for me. It's a challenge. Thank you.
Right. Oh, okay. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm just going to share another couple things quickly that people sent in on the webcast, and then we're going to mute the call and go into the space. We're already in the space, but we'll go into the space in a more quiet and formal way. All right. So we have a few people sharing that they feel ungrounded. Somebody said, "I feel without a name. I feel abandoned. Nothing is working." Someone else says, "I feel happy and settled and anticipating the future with excitement, though challenges do keep popping up." So just notice, everybody, that challenges keep popping up even for the person who feels happy and settled. Somebody else writes, "Feeling great spiritually and emotionally, some very strange physical conditions suddenly showing up like vertigo." So again, we have somebody who's feeling great but having things show up like vertigo. Somebody else writing that they've been feeling down and stuck for about 3 weeks. Unable to focus, I think that's a common theme. Somebody else is asking for grounding, help with grounding. Someone else is noticing the people around her feel stressed even though she feels good. Someone else is stuck and angry about finances. and on. We have a few hundred people on the call already, so I'm not going to read any more of these, but we just, all of these things we have now in the field of the call. All right, I'm going to mute the call. And we may unmute again at different points in the call, and probably toward the end. All right, so I want to welcome everybody officially. Thank you to those who shared, and thank you to those who are just joining us in the call. Every person who joins this type of call is contributing your own light, your own spiritual energy, your own prayer, your own being to the whole. And the emphasis in a matrix call is always the whole, what we create together. So I want everybody to just stop and be aware of that for a moment. And I know we hear that a lot as a concept, but let's feel it as a reality. In a moment, we're going to go into a connection, and I'll lead you through a bit of a process to help enhance that experience of being together. I am on the call from Jerusalem. We have people from France, from Spain, from England, from America, from Canada, from all over the world. As you probably are aware, I've been experiencing my own turbulence in the last couple of weeks, and that is the nature of our times. There's no question about that. I am a living laboratory, as I believe we all are. If anyone tells you that they're not experiencing anything, they're either completely clueless and out of touch, or they're lying to you. I don't care what position they are in. In fact, many of you are light workers, and I think light workers tend to be much more sensitive than average and are likely to be experiencing more turbulence. And turbulence doesn't mean that everything's negative. Turbulence can occur like everything negative, but it's, I think, often more like waves. Like the waves lift you up, they drop you down. Sometimes it's gentle, sometimes it's rough, sometimes they crash over your head. Sometimes you can't see the shore. Sometimes you're sitting on the shore. Whatever it is. But that's the situation that we are all in. We're in a kind of living laboratory at this moment. So with Sandy, as someone mentioned, with economic challenge, as someone else mentioned, crisis in government, war in the Middle East, and the general sense that we all have, whether at the moment any given one of us is feeling great and grounded or feeling completely up in the air, unsettled, frightened, and we have people feeling everything from across the spectrum, and sometimes we're feeling those, all of those things across the spectrum all within the space of a minute or two, and that's part of the turbulence. So it is the nature of the ego, and I want to use the word ego synonymously with human personality or identity. It's the nature of the human part of us, that human perspective, to try to hold things together. I use that expression all the time. I'm holding it together. I'm not holding it together. But whatever the case may be, however we're doing in that effort, it's the nature of our ego to try to hold things together. The ego resists change with all of its might. And I'm certainly no exception to that. But I want you to just imagine for just a moment if the caterpillar would be trying with all of its might to hold on to its legs. So the caterpillar wraps itself in its cocoons and it starts to melt. And it's like, oh my gosh, I can't feel my legs. What's happening? Let me get back to my legs. So I think that's a natural reaction that we all have in this process, at least some of the time. So you just want to be aware of that and treat it with gentle compassion. It is no accident that in Kabbalah, in authentic Kabbalah, these times are called the birth pangs of redemption. Redemption, Geula, the coming era, synonyms for what we all know as the shift. Torah and authentic Kabbalah are part of the spiritual blueprint for creation. So when something comes out of the blueprint, when we find a new insight within the blueprint, within this ancient wisdom, it actually comes out in a physical way in the world. So we want to, during this call, touch each one of us in our own way, touch new places within ourselves, and in doing that, co-create a new reality outside of ourselves. So the way this call will go, first of all, we're going to go through a connection in just a moment, and then I'm going to be exploring with you some of the mystical text, and we'll go in and out of that text. I'm not going to read word for word. In some places I probably will, in other places I won't. I'm going to be looking for your questions as well, and if something seems very relevant, I'll interrupt and answer it. And then probably in the middle of the call and toward the end of the call, we want to go again into a space, into a healing space, and we're going to be doing a group prayer healing session all together at some point during the call. And again, I want you to be aware that we are tapping into some forces of creation. So when we do that with an open mind and an open heart and the desire to be channels for something new to come into the world, something new that will help to heal our own minds and hearts, help to heal our families and our communities, help to heal our earth, help to heal our human culture, that we invite that divine healing light in a much deeper way. So let's start by making a connection. And we're going to try to make a deep connection. So just begin by breathing. And once again, as you're breathing, in and out, follow the sensation that your breath catalyzes as it moves through your body. Notice where it's going. Don't force anything. Just follow it with your awareness. Continue to breathe. And as you're breathing, be aware of your body and any sensations it might have. Whether it's temperature, if parts of you feel warm or parts of you feel cold, or whether there's something that feels constricted or something that feels heavy and relaxed. Again, we're not judging. We're simply noticing. We are observing as we breathe. So continue to observe your physical body, your face, your skull, your chest, your back, your shoulders, your hands, your feet, any sensations you might be feeling. So starting with the physical. And now we want to dive in a little deeper. So I'd like you to imagine yourself zooming in into your body, into yourself, into an awareness of the molecules that make up yourself. And zooming in even further into an awareness of the atoms, the protons, neutrons, electrons that make up an even deeper, more core level of your physical being. And then into the space in between those subatomic particles. Just allow your awareness to go into the space. So now we're not focusing on the physical matter. We're focusing on the space between the building blocks of that physical matter. And I invite you to become aware that that space is actually divine light, energy, and information. In Kabbalah, it's called Heli energy, Helios, the ether of which the universe is made. It's a non-physical energy, that a light that thickens and becomes physical. So we're going to stay in that very light place in between, that space. Continue to breathe very gently without judgment. And become aware that that divine light, that energy, light, and information, the Heli space within you, is the exact same energy, light, and information that thickens into animals, other people, stars, planets, and galaxies, stones, earth, grass, trees. As you breathe in and out, feel with each in-breath that you're taking in physical matter and the energy and space that makes up that physical matter into your body from the outside. And with every breath out, you're releasing it into the cosmos. And in that way, as well as in many other ways, we are constantly merging with one another, exchanging between us back and forth the essence of the substance that makes us be. So now, if you can, just simply be aware in a gentle, quiet way, without any judgment or need to comment. Be aware of that space as one giant ocean of the divine light and energy that's flowing through all of the universe and all of the universes, and each and every one of us on this call, between us, within us, outside of us, and just for a moment, as we feel the energy moving like waves, back and forth, back and forth, in and out of everything that is, changing shape, changing form, always connected with its source. Let's continue to breathe, but this time let's focus on breathing together. So as we breathe in, as a circle of awakening across the globe, circle of consciousness, opening to the shift, we're breathing in together our common divine source, feeling it enter our hearts, feeling it circulate through our bodies. As we breathe out, we are exchanging. Your breath going to the end of the cosmos and back again. The entire universe, one breathing, connected, being alive. Okay, and with that, just gently return to an awareness of your surroundings. And we'll just leave just 5-10 seconds more of space, not to exit too quickly. But we'll maintain the connection throughout the call. So when we're in a connected space, connected with one another, connected with ourselves, connected with our source, we're far, far, far more able to download, to receive light from above. And that's exactly what we'll be doing throughout this matrix call. So before I go into the text, I want to say a few things. Many of you have listened to the recordings from the Authentic Kabbalah website. If you haven't and you want to, you can email me, and I'll let you know where to get those. Becoming a luminary. So the idea is, what's happening here? What's happening here is we're moving into a world of oneness. And that is through a three-step process of separation, oneness, separation, and a move toward oneness again. So in order to create this universe, the one creator, the infinite conscious creative source of all there is, and not only is the creator the source of all there is, the creator is all there is. In fact, the core concept in Authentic Kabbalah is Ein Od Mobado. There is nothing here but source. Nothing here. So who are we? Who are you? Who am I? What's going on here? So the idea is that by concealing the everything nature of the creator, of all there is, by concealing that infinity, what was created first was room for finite beings. So if you look at the situation where first there is an infinite spreading out of divine light, and then there's an infinite concealment of that divine light, leaving an empty space where finite things can exist. That would be you and me and everything in this universe, the things we know about, the things we don't know about. So at that point, the core feature of creation is concealment of divine light. And that, in fact, is our experience of our world. Sometimes we get a glimpse of divine light. Often we might get a glimpse of that light when we see the face of a newborn baby or a child or a beautiful animal or a beautiful sunset or when we feel connected in some way. And often I think we do have those experiences. Those are experiences of the light coming in. And they're more and more common because physical and spiritual are merging as we go back to oneness. But most of the time, our core personality is an experience of separateness, where our infinite awareness is cut off in order that we can have a finite experience. So in this journey back to oneness, everybody's talking about oneness in these times, particularly in the New Age segment of the population, which I think everybody on this call is part of that segment of the population. So people are all talking about oneness and how we have a divine nature and how we're going back to oneness. But how does that process actually happen? That's part of what we want to talk about in the call tonight. So before we go into the actual text, I want to refer a little bit to some of the concepts from Becoming a Luminary. So the idea here is that in the analogies of Kabbalah, the creator is compared to the sun. It's just an analogy. The sun is simply a creation. It's not the creator. But the creator, the light of the creator can be understood when we think of the light of the sun. It shines. It never runs out of light. It warms the earth. It's the giver. The earth is the receiver. If we look at the sun and the moon reflects the light of the sun. And the sun shines into the moon. The moon is smaller than the sun, and the sun is shining into the moon. When the process of returning to oneness is fulfilled, Kabbalah says the moon will be equal to the sun and it will have its own light. When is the moon full? Astronomically, when the sun is on one side of the sky and the moon is on the other side of the sky and the earth is in between the sun and the moon, then the moon appears to be full. So the light that we experience from the creator is the biggest when the earth is in between the sun and the moon. When the moon orbits around the earth, when the moon is connected to the sun, as every month the new moon, during the time of the new moon, the moon and the sun are closest to each other and the earth is not between those two heavenly bodies. So at that point, the moon and the sun are connecting essence to essence without the interference of the earth. But at that time, the light of the moon is dark. So Kabbalah compares us to the moon, the creator to the sun. I'm not going to talk about this in depth. This isn't really the topic of today, but I really want to touch on it a little bit. We're experiencing great turbulence in the earth. If you want, you could look at the earth as an analogy to our earthly selves, to our human personality, to our ego-based selves. So when we experience ourselves, our ego, in a strong way, when things seem solid and things seem down to earth, we talk about being grounded, things seem stable. At that point, it feels very good because the ego resists change, because then we have a sense that we know who we are, we're walking on solid ground, we know what's going to happen, we know where we came from, we know where we're going to. But when there's turbulence, there's a breaking up of that solid state. And it feels very, very unstable. But what we want to be aware of is that we, as the moon in this analogy, are closest to the sun. We're experiencing our source in a way of essence to essence. So just throwing that in, just be aware that the principle that we're putting on the table, that turbulence, ungroundedness, even though we all seek to become grounded, particularly physically, we want to be healthy, we want to be well, we want to feel solid, but to a certain degree, ungroundedness is what allows us to experience that oneness from the inside out. So I'll just throw in one more idea here. In Hebrew, the language of Kabbalah, the language of the blueprint, So word for world is olam. And that word comes from a Hebrew root, which means concealment. So the nature of the world is that it conceals its source. Once again, as the world shakes, and people use the word shaky, even on tonight's call, in the beginning of the call, the word shaky, things are shaking. It leaves me shaken. I'm not grounded. So as the world shakes more and more, that concealment is shaking open. And again, whether we feel great or whether we feel disturbed and anxious and uncomfortable, and those things tend to come in cycles, we want to be aware of what's happening. We want to be aware that as things are shaking, we're coming closer to our essence. So the path back to oneness doesn't look like pure light and pure joy. At least not, perhaps there are some individuals, some exceptions, some exceptional people that experience it that way all the time. I highly doubt it though, because it's not part of the paradigm of creation. The path back to oneness, even though it will end in pure joy, that's our destination. But the path back, because it's like that metamorphosis of a caterpillar, it involves the melting down. It involves the instability. And again, the ego, the human part of us, resists change. So the path back looks like a path through some kinds of discomfort. The more we can let go, so can't expect, and let me just emphasize this, we can't expect things to stay the same. I'm saying this to myself as well as to you. Somebody asked, how can I be me in the midst of turbulence? So the question I would ask you is, which part of you is you? The part of you that is stuck to a certain way of being, a certain comfort zone, that part of you probably can't stay stable in the midst of the turbulence, because ultimately it's not meant to be stable. When we look at when we as human beings connected to that finite state of reality, we attach ourselves to things, to the things around us. As human beings going back into the state of oneness, we connect ourselves to that space within where we're one with our source. So all of that in the way of introduction. And checking to see if any questions came in. Okay, so I'm going to go into the text at this point. And if you have any burning questions, feel free to send them into the webcast. So this discourse, this text of Kabbalah, of authentic Kabbalah, is something I've taught before. I taught it a couple of years ago. I'm going to teach it in a little bit of a different way now. But I want to first explain that one of the terms that's used for authentic Kabbalah is Divrei Elokim Chaim, which means the living words of God. Or the words of living God, you could translate it either way. The idea is that these concepts and these words are channels of light. As we become more expanded, we're more and more able to encompass the light, to understand the light, to feel the light, to integrate the light within ourselves. Because that light begins to, like a light that you take into a dark room, it shows you what's already there. Divine light doesn't just shine on us from the outside. That would be like the full moon. That's really not very close to the sun. The moon is a reflector. Divine light, as we get deeper into this process, actually shows us what's inside of ourselves. It shows you what is within you. So that light, rather than being a light like the light of the sun that's shining simply from the outside in, warming you up, but it doesn't touch you deep inside, would be more like a candle shining from the inside so that you start to see what's really going on within your own system. What is your true nature? At first, you might just get a glimpse of it. The light of a candle doesn't illuminate like the light of a sun. It just lights up little corners here and there. But still, it's a light that warms. It's a light that comes from the inside. It's a light that reveals things in the shadows. And that's the place, that's one of the places where, from which we're tapping in, or to which we're tapping in right now. Okay, so the Torah talks about a time. And I guess I need to backtrack just a moment for those of you who aren't familiar with these teachings yet. The idea of authentic Kabbalah, Kabbalah is taken from the stories in the Bible, in the five books of Moses, and other sources from the written Torah. So it takes all of the words of the Torah are in code, and there are levels upon levels within that code, secrets upon secrets. And if you understand how the code works, you can find those secrets. And again, the Torah is the blueprint for creation. You can find those secrets and apply them to our times and to your life. So in this particular text, it talks about the time from the Bible when the Jewish people were about to go into the land of Israel. They had come out of the slavery of Egypt, and they had wandered through the desert for 40 years, and they were standing on one side of the Jordan River ready to go into the promised land. Now, every week, a different portion of the Torah, of the five books of Moses, of the Bible, is read in every part of the world. And it's the same portion. We go through the yearly cycle. And those divine, because it's the divine blueprint, those influences shine into the world and bring new things into being. If you understand them deeply enough, you can see what's happening. So in this particular portion, which is called the portion of Balak, again, it's describing the time when the Jewish people were standing ready to go into the promised land, which is an exact correspondence to the time in which we're living now. We are standing at the edge of the shift, ready to enter into a new world. But what? The problem is we're in the midst of a metamorphosis. The metamorphosis is not always comfortable. How do we pass through that corridor? How do we pass through the birth canal into a new world? And that's what this is about. So the prophets talk about a time, particularly the prophet Micha, talks about a time when, as it says, the people will be surrounded by many nations to the point where they will not be able to have any hope in human help, not be able to depend upon human beings at all. So this is a prophecy of a time of great turbulence and great trouble, when the situation, and again, this Kabbalah comes from the story of the Jewish people, so it applies to the world at large, but it particularly through the story of the Jewish people. So there will come a time when the Jewish people, as it says in the prophet, in the prophecy, will be surrounded by many nations to the point where there will be no hope in human help whatsoever. Very, very troublesome time. Some of us, I did get a comment from somebody that I'm projecting and not everybody feels this way, so I'm really happy to hear that, and I hope it continues to be easy for those of you for whom it's easy. For those of you for whom it is easy, you probably have a lot of energy, so shine your light on those around you. And if that's the case, if you're in an easy time, then that's probably why you're being gifted with an easy time. And for those of you for whom it's not easy, you have the opportunity to experience the metamorphosis on a deep and powerful level. Let me throw in here that it says, and I quote this sometimes, it says that the purpose of all challenges and obstacles are to reveal the hidden, miraculous powers of the soul. The purpose of all challenges and obstacles is to reveal the hidden, miraculous powers of the soul. So when you can't hold on to what you're used to holding on to, allow yourself to look for something else. Something else that might first come up as a quiet something, as a glimmer of something, but can grow and grow and grow. So in any case, the Torah talks about a time, the prophets talk about a time when things will really look bad. And there will be evil from the outside, and there will be evil within as well. And in fact, it says that the evil will be so great, so difficult, that we will need divine help to get free of it. So again, the theme here is it's too big for us. When you look at a Hurricane Sandy, who can stop a hurricane? Who can stop a tsunami? We're looking at forces that, who can stop a global economic crash? You know, I think many of us look around and, you know, when we're in that state of feeling the turbulence, we wonder, is there something I can do? It seems like there's nothing I can do. So that, again, is part of the process. It is predicted from thousands of years ago. So what is the point? The question is asked, what is the point of all of that? What's the point of putting human beings in a situation where they can't depend upon, they have no solutions. As the expression goes, the question is bigger than the answer. So the point of this is in order that we can shift our consciousness from holding on to the outside stability, from being a moon, from being a reflector, shift to a direct connection to our source. So it said, the prophecy continues, and it says that at a certain point, again using the prototype of the Jewish people, that at a certain point, when there's a realization, a deep realization that there is no human help, the Jewish people will call out to God, they will give up. And again, this applies to everybody. This is a prototype for human being and human transformation, a prototype for the metamorphosis back to oneness. Put our hands up in the air and simply ask for help from a deeper place, a deeper source. At that point, the promise is that everything will turn around. So now we want to look at this on a deeper level. So and now I'm going to go into the text a little bit. So this Torah portion, Parshas Balak, is talking about a specific time, again, before going into the land of the promised land the very first time, when that is a prototype for the times that we're living in now. So what is, what is the point of this time of darkness? And I'm getting, a few people are asking this question as well. What is the point of this time of darkness? It is to make the final preparation for the time when everything will be brilliant light. Looking at the analogy of the caterpillar, and I'm absolutely convinced that the caterpillar, butterfly, that creature, that dual creature, the ground, the earthbound worm and the beautiful flying flower, which is really one and the same creature, was created as a kind of analogy, a parable for us to look at and to understand what our own nature is all about, and especially what these times are all about. So imagine yourself for a moment as the caterpillar. Imagine the feeling of melting down, the feeling of not knowing, your feet aren't touching the ground. You're hanging from a tree, maybe upside down, turning into gel. And imagine when your shoulders and your back start to feel a little funny, like there's something there that's not supposed to be there, and you feel constricted, and the space inside the cocoon gets tighter and tighter and tighter. So what's the point of all of that? What's the point of the constriction? There's a story that's told, probably many of you have heard it, maybe it's a true story, that somebody saw a butterfly struggling to get out of the cocoon, and the person saw the struggle and felt so bad for the butterfly that he gently took his scissors and snipped open the cocoon, and the butterfly fell out all wet but was unable to fly. And the lesson of the parable, or the true story, is that in order to be able to activate its wings, the butterfly has to squeeze out that remaining liquid from the wings so that they can be used to fly. So the purpose of this time of stress, and it's not that there's no light here. So for those of you who are feeling the light, you know, if you only feel light, good for you, and look around and help your neighbors, because I can guarantee you that most of them aren't feeling that. And if you're feeling light sometimes and you're feeling darkness other times, you know, I believe that the light comes each, you know, this happens in stages. It doesn't happen all at one moment. So we feel a constriction when we connect more deeply, when we yearn more deeply, when we let go more deeply, when we ask more deeply, so then we can have an experience of light and expansion, and we might feel like we're flying for a while. And then, you know, if the process isn't finished, we might have another period of constriction. Guess what that looks like? That looks like a birth process. That's exactly how the birth process works. There's constriction, there's forward movement, birth, connecting to new light and new life, and then there's further constriction. At one point, there's no more constriction, and the baby comes out into a whole new existence and a whole new world. So the purpose, once again, of the times of constriction are in order to make those preparations, those final preparations, to squeeze out the liquid, to change the attitude, to connect to a deeper part of ourselves, to call out to our common divine source, to help one another, to change the paradigm through which we view life. And what is the preparation, according to the text, for the final redemption, for the culmination of the shift, for the entering into the new world of the coming era? As it says in the beginning of the prophecy, now notice this, the prophecy talks about a time, and I'll read it in Hebrew. It says, there will come a time when we will be surrounded by many nations, evil from without, evil from within, asher lo yikav l'ish, v'lo yeyachal ibnei adam, that we will not be able to hope in human help and not be able to depend upon people. So what is, turn it around, what is the attitude that we're supposed to have now in order to facilitate the shift, in order to be ourselves in the midst of the turbulence, in order to access the new light, in order to learn how to fly, in order to connect on the deepest possible level, in order to go back to oneness? What is the attitude that we have to have? Exactly what it describes in the prophecy. Exactly that. Do not put your hope in man, and do not depend upon people. Okay, I'm going to skip over a little bit of the text and just explain briefly. So there's a concept already, as probably any spiritual person would feel, that we don't depend upon people if we believe that there's a creator and that that's our source. So we depend upon the creator. We believe in miracles, and we don't get stuck depending on people. And we know that things come from that creative source. So we already know that that is the proper way to live. If you think your success and your life is dependent upon the people around you, good luck to you. So we already know, this seems like a simple idea, not to depend upon people and not to depend on human help, that we have to rely on a light from above. But there's an even deeper explanation of this. And that is, according to authentic Kabbalah, according to Hasidus, when it says person, that the final preparation is not to depend upon people, it doesn't refer just to human beings. Rather, it refers to a level of divinity known as Ish HaElyon, which is the supernal man. So the transition stage here, and this is a subtle concept, if you're not so familiar, I'll explain a bit. God invests himself in the world in two different ways, in a general sense. There are two different forms of light. One is the form of light, which is called Mimaliko Amin, which is the light that fills all worlds. So that we have a world here. We have laws of nature. The sun comes up, the sun goes down. The earth turns, the moon rotates around, the moon orbits around the earth spins, the galaxy, the cosmos moves in its orbits. Everything works basically the way it's supposed to because there are laws of nature. There's some more laws of nature. If I take a rock and I go to the top of the Empire State Building and I drop the rock, it's going to fall with a big smash onto the ground. It's not going to fly up. It's going to fly down every single time. If I jump off the Empire State Building, also I'm going to go down. I'm not going to go up. So there are many, many laws of nature. People are born. They get older. When they get older, they tend to get wrinkles. Etc. There's the cycle of life, and these laws of nature can be from the most obvious to the most subtle, and they operate everywhere. As Scotty used to say in Star Trek, you can't change the laws of nature. But from a deeper perspective, what are those laws of nature? If we believe, as quantum physics shows, and I think as so many of us believe, that there is no existence outside of consciousness or separate from consciousness, and if we believe that everything that exists truly is from one core creative source, one conscious creative source, so what are the laws of nature? And how could they be laws? I'll take it a step further. Kabbalah teaches us that the world wasn't created once and then as a solid and then is like left to age and is being supervised in some kind of loose way from above. On the contrary, Kabbalah teaches that the world is being created, brought into being again and again and again and again at every instant from infinite divine potential. And in fact, this active participation in creation on the part of the Creator is so strong and so continuous that it says that if the Creator would stop bringing the world into being for one instant, stop speaking the words of creation for one instant, the entire world would revert into nothingness as if it had never been. And not only as if it had never been, but it would have never been. In other words, even time, even the past, would turn into nothingness, into divine nothingness again. So that is how active and present tense, the creative consciousness and desire that is the core of everything, this divine energy that we focused on in our connection at the beginning of the call. I just want to take a moment, because this is a matrix call, it's not just a class. I want to take a moment and just ask you to go within yourself again and remember that connection that we have between us, that we have to ourselves, that we have to our source, to that divine light energy information that is running through everything in the universe, and then in fact is the core nature of the universe. If you like, you could look at everything, including yourself, as God in a costume. So just be with that sense of infinite divine light and potential for just a few moments and see if you can just get a sense, just a glimpse of that as an ever-present real reality, bringing the world into being like a pulse, like the beat of a heart, creating, bringing it back to its source, creating, bringing it back to its source, creating, bring the world into existence, uncreating it, bringing it back into its source, like the waves of the ocean coming into the beach and going out again, coming in and going out again, continuously flowing in and flowing out, like your own breath, into your body, out of your body, into your body, out of your body, renewing itself from your heart, reoxygenating. It says that the blood, hadam hu hanefesh, the blood is the soul, the life force of a person, flows with the blood, which is why when there's no circulation in a certain part of your body, you have no feeling there, because the soul's not getting in. That aspect of the soul which gives life is not getting in. So this, in the same way, the infinite divine creative life force is flowing into the world from its source and then back again to the heart of creation and then into all of the worlds, not just this world, but there are many worlds, and flowing down through that entire system of universes until it gets to this physical world, and then distributing into each and every one of us and each and every aspect of our physical planet and all of its surrounding the cosmos, and then back out again and back to its source, then flowing in again, circulating around, and then back to its source. So basically, that is the truth behind the laws of nature. So all of this divine light is flowing through physical things, but it's also flowing through those natural laws. So the power of gravity to make a rock fall down instead of going up, that is coming into being anew at every moment as the world is recreated. The fact that the sun rises and the sun sets on a never-ending cycle, that phenomenon is being brought into existence again and again. And again, and again, and again, and again from its infinite divine creative source. And so with every single one of the laws of nature. So when we are unaware of this, when we walk around from that perspective of our ego, from the human perspective, that part of us, the caterpillar legs, I'm just going to call it the caterpillar legs. When we walk around on our caterpillar legs, we see laws of nature. We are tiny. That's why we have to be grounded. That's why it's so terrifying not to be grounded, because we're tiny and helpless and defenseless. In this vast universe, the universe is big and solid, and we're not so solid, and certainly not so big. That's the caterpillar experience. The, what I'll call the butterfly experience, is the polar opposite of that. The butterfly experience, the butterfly flies on the wind. Doesn't matter. All it has to do is stretch out its wings, and it's carried. So the butterfly doesn't need solid earth. In fact, it doesn't even spend that much time on solid earth. The butterfly isn't stuck in one place. The butterfly can go anywhere. The butterfly can soar. So when we look at this back to the levels of divine light. The level of, that's called again, the Malakul Almin, the light that fills all worlds, is that light of the Creator that is in the costume, so to speak, of the laws of nature. Are they truly laws? Yes, but only because they're being created as laws right now, and right now, and right now, and right now, and right now. There's a higher level of light called Soviv Kol Almin, which Soviv means, Mamali means to fill, the light that fills the world, the divine light that fills the world, and then Soviv Kol Almin is the divine light that surrounds the world. It's called a transcendent light. Basically, it's a light that is so huge, so brilliant, that nothing in the world can really encompass it. It's like as if you have a 60-watt light bulb and you put 70 million watts of light through that light bulb, it's going to break. So when we talk about going back to oneness, it has to be a process that comes in stages and steps. Because if we would receive all the light of oneness in our little bodies and in our relatively little consciousness, we would break. We wouldn't be able to exist as finite individuals. So that is the whole purpose behind this process. With every breath that we take, with every beat of our heart, with every pulse of divine life force coming in and flowing out of the universe, we are expanding little bit by little bit by little bit by little bit by little bit. However, the good news, I guess it's the good news, is that we're very, very close to the end. So again, we are standing as a collective human being. All of us, remember, are made from the same substance that flows between all of us and back to our source and then back into all of us. So we are standing metaphorically on the other side of the Jordan River, ready to enter into the promised land. And we are entering, or we have already begun to enter, into a place where lo yikavo ish, where we cannot put our hope in man. Now, what does that mean according to authentic Kabbalah once again? That means the supernal man, the laws of nature, this light of the Creator that is called Malakul Almin. We cannot put our trust in nature, in anything natural. The world has run out of time and space to continue on its natural course, basically, or it is getting close to running out. It's coming up to the edge. The good thing about coming up to the edge is, you know, if you're running fast enough, I don't know how many of you used to see cartoons when you were little. I used to watch cartoons like I was addicted when I was a kid. So in every cartoon, practically, the hero, whether it was Mighty Mouse or Mickey Mouse, some mouse or other, was running away from whatever, the big dog, and would come up to the edge of the cliff and would keep running, and running right over the empty space. As soon as he would look down, he would fall. Anyway, the idea is when you get to the edge of the cliff, you want to be able to fly. So that is, in a certain sense, that is the purpose of this time. What are the final preparations that we have to make? What does it mean not to put our trust in man? To stop depending upon limiting ourselves to the laws of nature, and to begin to connect to, or rather to, the divine light that is invested and filling the world and running through the laws of nature, and rather to relate to the divine directly. So what does this mean? Okay, just checking the web chat for a second. So lots of questions. I'm going to see if I can get to some of them toward the end of the call. Okay, so we're going to go in back into the text now. So there is an expression that it says that you are not allowed to depend upon a miracle. So what do we mean when we say to depend upon this light, to connect to the divine light that is above and transcends the laws of nature? So the idea is not to just sit and say, everything's just going to happen for me. If I'm not relating to the laws of nature, if I'm not relating to this level of divine light, why do I have to do anything? I'll just pray, or I'll just co-create, I'll think about what I really want, I'll attract it, that's the end of it. That is not the purpose for which we are here, however. Specifically, what we're here for is to take this world, which, if you remember I said in the beginning, the world, the core nature of the world is concealment. Why is that? Because truthfully, there's nothing here but infinite divinity. So in order for you or for me to have a human experience, not to be swallowed up in that infinite divinity, like the light of the sun in the center of the sun doesn't look like light, it's just part of the sun. That's our core nature. If the divine, if the creator was not concealing that light, we would not have a human experience at all. We wouldn't have any experience because we would simply be absorbed in that oneness. In order to give us the greatest gift possible, which is the gift of having experience, the gift of being, truly being, that light had to be concealed. And if you think about it, you know, there used to be a riddle, I'm sure there still is this riddle, but I used to think about it a lot. What would happen if an irresistible force would hit an immovable object? What would win? So basically, you have the situation where you have infinite divine light, and that light is being concealed. What does it take to conceal infinite divine light? It takes infinite holding back. And if you just look around where you are right now and just allow yourself to imagine for a moment or to become aware of, see if you can get a glimmer of, the fact that everything around you, in order to exist, there's an active process in each and every finite thing is divinity holding back, hiding itself, holding back that light so that finite things can exist. The problem with that, that's the first stage of being, but the problem with that is that then we live in a world of separateness, and we see where that experience of separateness ultimately leads. It leads to the kind of breakdown that we are experiencing today. So on the path back to oneness, we need to start with the experience of separateness, but then that separateness needs to reconnect, needs to be illuminated by its source. The thing is, though, when we reconnect to our source, we're not connecting from the outside in. It's not that we're feeling more and more and more light shining on us. We might have that experience, but that's not the experience of coming back to oneness. The true experience of coming back to oneness is when we feel the light within ourselves. We start to feel the light within ourselves. Now, paradoxically, that doesn't necessarily look like, right from the get-go, feeling powerful. It starts, just like creation starts with the concealment of the light, it starts often by feeling powerless. And I'm offering this as I'm sharing this for all of you who may be feeling powerless either now or some of the time. So when we feel powerless, we need to know that we are closer to the truth of our own inner light. Again, asking the question, which part of you is feeling powerless? The caterpillar part of you is feeling powerless. But that is an opportunity to allow your consciousness to sink in and connect to the butterfly part of you. That butterfly part of you is probably, again, I'm speaking in generality, so if this doesn't apply to you, that's fine. But the butterfly part of you is mostly unknown because it's new, because that's what the shift is all about. That's what the metamorphosis is all about. If you're already identifying fully with the butterfly, then you've completed the shift to whatever degree, you know, to whatever degree you have. But if you're feeling that your caterpillar nature, and if your caterpillar nature is saying, oh my gosh, the waves are rough, I don't know what's going to happen, just try. In fact, we're going to do an exercise right now, again, because it's a matrix call. Less information, more experience and transformation. So let's just go into that feeling together for a moment. So again, we're going to stop and breathe. And if you're feeling any discomfort or insecurity right now, invite it to come up and be even more present. And if you're not, then see if you can be in touch with a time when you were. And simply observe the energy of that experience. We'll call it turbulence or caterpillar. Feel the energy of that. And I encourage you to let go of any story you might have around it and just feel the energy. Where is it in your body? Is it in your chest? Is it in your shoulders, your back, your head? Wherever it may be. And breathe into it. Allowing that feeling, that energy, to expand bigger and bigger. See if you can feel the space inside of it. That same space that we went to inside of our molecules, inside of our atoms. That same space, that's the divine light, energy, and information that's running through everything in the universe. It's in there as well. See if you can send some love and compassion to that energy, that uncomfortable energy. And from the perspective of observing it as you breathe, see if you can sense a quieter space, a calmer space, outside or beneath or in the core of that energy, of that discomfort. And allow yourself to simply be there. As if you're a baby in a womb. Floating in that water, not needing to do anything, not needing to know anything, simply growing, developing, safe and protected inside of that space. And moving on. So what is the path through which we relate to that higher transcendent light called Soviv Kol Almin? So again, the point is not that the laws of nature will go away. The world is actually, for those of you who are wondering, the world is it's like a work of art. It's the Creator's work of art. It's our work of art. It's not going away. But it is going to be illuminated by its source. So stage one, everything's bundled together in the infinite light. Stage two, the infinite light is completely concealed so that finite caterpillar things can emerge. Stage three is those finite caterpillar things are open from the inside out to experiencing a new light, to experiencing the light of their source within. Same thing with the world at large. The world's not disappearing. But the world is going to be illuminated with the light of its creative source, its true divine source. So that's the job here. So from this, we have to understand that when it says that lo yikavel ish, don't put your hope in man, it doesn't mean that there will be no help from the laws of nature, that there will be nothing will happen in the world. It doesn't mean the world's going to explode and go away. But rather, that what will happen is that we will come to see more and more and more that nature and the laws of nature are completely one with divinity. Until the point where when something happens that seems physical, we won't see the physical, but we will see the divine. In other words, if you, everybody on this call knows, I'm sure that I do interviews of energy healers, and I do energy healing myself, and many of you probably also do energy healing yourself. So is it a technique that's healing? Is it a particular technique? Or is it what's underneath that technique? If someone experiences something that seems amazing, that seems like miraculous, is it because of the power of the technique, or is it because of the divine light that's being invited to flow through that technique? here in Israel, as I'm sure everybody knows, we just went through 8 days of, I don't know if you'd call it war, impending war. It seemed, I think it could be called war since there were bombs falling everywhere, including where I am in Jerusalem or close to it, and air raid sirens and so on and so forth. So one of the big phenomenon that got talked about here a lot was the Iron Dome. And for those of you not familiar, the Iron Dome is an anti-missile defense system that I don't even know where it got developed or how it works, but basically it was shooting missiles that were falling, when they were still in the sky, exploding them in the sky, and it was a great big wonderful thing, and the Iron Dome is protecting. Unfortunately, it didn't protect all of the time. But anyway, the Iron Dome, really big deal. But what we really need to look at, it's a problem when we are moving toward a world of oneness to see those kinds of natural things, to see that the Iron Dome is the protector. In fact, it is the divine that's the protector. The divine, when we have protection, it is the divine protecting us through the medium of the Iron Dome, or through the medium of the energy healing, or through the medium of that check that comes in the mail that you didn't expect, or through the medium of the job that comes out of nowhere, or through the medium of the relationship that suddenly comes into your life, or whatever it may be, or through the medium of the thought that comes into your head from nowhere. Those are all we need to be aware that, not that those things are coming through the natural process of life, but we want to practice relating directly to the essence of the divine, to the essence of the Creator. And that is our road back to oneness. Just a little aside, during the Gulf War, I don't know how many people remember the Gulf War, but there were 39 Scuds that fell on Israel. Scud missiles are huge. They're like apartment buildings. And some of them fell on apartment buildings, in fact, and most of them exploded. Some of them fell on empty areas. One of them fell on the main gas line that went through the country, that went through Israel, but there had been a malfunction in the gas a couple days before, and they had turned off the gas, so it didn't explode. There were apartment buildings that were flattened to the ground. People walked out without a scratch. As I heard a Marine from America who was stationed here said, God is alive and well and living in Israel. So the point is, what were we supposed to see? What was the world supposed to see at that time? Scuds don't aim, they don't aim the Scuds that well, so a lot of them missed. Oh, it's good luck that the gas was turned off. No, we were supposed to see, as we are always now supposed to see, that there's divinity running through everything. And that the laws of nature are still functioning, but they're not functioning in the same way that they used to. The nature of nature is changing. So we find that that shining through those laws of nature is that light that's above nature. That's what we want to look for in our lives. That's what we want to create in our lives, or rather co-create. So we want to look, we want to train ourselves to see divinity. And the whole idea of doing, we're not allowed to do nothing, we need to do, we are supposed to be actors in this world. We can accomplish, we can move forward in our lives in two different ways. One way is that we know that everything is created by the conscious creator, by its source. But one way to look at nature and the laws of nature is, God set them up, and he wants them to run, and he wants us to pay attention to them, because, after all, he created them. So what you do if you need more money, you need to have better connections, you need to have a better education, if you need, better healing results, you need to find the best of all healing modalities, whatever it might be. So from that sense, we see the creator and the creation as two separate things. But from another perspective, from a higher perspective, that would be the laws, that would be from the light of Mamalakul Amin, the light that fills all worlds. From the perspective of the light of Sovivkul Amin, the light that surrounds all worlds, there is no separation between nature and the creator. Remember, the world has been brought into being every moment, like the beat of a heart, like the beat of a pulse. Into existence, out of existence, into existence, out of existence. I don't think I said when I first described this that each time the divine energy that creates the cosmos and our world, each time it goes back to its source, with each beat of the cosmic pulse, it brings down a higher light that then flows into the world. when your blood goes back to your heart, it's true that you breathe in new oxygen. But it's not a higher level of oxygen necessarily from the level that you had in the previous breath. But when the world is being created in the same prototype, like the beat of a heart, like the blood running through the body, divine energy running through the entire system of the universe. So with each beat, it's a higher energy. There's more light. The universe is constantly being expanded. We know this even physically, that the universe is expanding. And that is because it's a reflection, the physical world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And spiritually, everything is expanding. The laws of nature are getting broader and brighter, more illuminated with their source. But we are participants in that process. So, for example, one of the laws of nature is that if you plant a seed in the earth and you water it and it has sun and so forth, it's going to grow. It's going to grow a plant. And this is something that was affixed in the law of nature, in that particular law of nature from the beginning of creation, and it actually says in the Torah that it will never cease. Planting and plowing and harvesting will never cease. It's one of the most natural, quote-unquote, things that there is. If you want to switch, if you want to move forward in your metamorphosis to the butterfly consciousness, then when you plant a seed, you're not thinking about whether it's natural for the earth to grow the seed. You're thinking, I am planting this seed, and the divine energy is going to make it grow. It's a one-to-one intimate connection. So the difference between these two ways of looking at the laws of nature doesn't look very different from the outside. If somebody's looking from the outside, so you're planting a seed, someone else is planting a seed. But the difference is in your awareness and in your level of commitment. What do you insist upon seeing in the world around you? We all have our habits, and we all have a part of our habit is the way that we look at life. I see this sometimes to my dismay in myself and also in the people around me, but primarily in myself. We have habituated ways of looking at things. So we want to change our habits, unless they're already really as good as they can get, so that we look at things from a deeper perspective. And that is an action that won't just change our attitude. It won't just change the way we feel. It will actually change the way things will come out. Because if you look, again, looking at if you were here in the beginning of the call, we talked a little bit about the sun and the moon and the earth, and how when the earth is in between the sun and the moon, thus the moon is as far as it gets in its orbit from the sun, the moon actually is at its brightest. It's reflecting the sun fully. When it gets close to the sun, it's dark. The moon is dark. That's the new moon. So you could say that the sun and the moon are reuniting and they're giving birth to a new moon. But basically, as Kabbalah explains it, the moon and the sun at that point are connected essence to essence. When you're connected with something, to something essence to essence, the light doesn't shine in the same way. The light doesn't shine from the outside in. The light shines only from the inside out. So that essence of the sun, when the moon is next to the sun, again, the sun represents, in this analogy, the creator and the moon represents us. So when the moon and the sun are connected essence to essence, they're experiencing the same thing, not two different things. The sun isn't shining upon the moon, giving it gifts, giving it light, and the moon isn't reflecting the sun. They're just one. And in the same way, we can look at our own experience. And each one of us can ask ourselves, who am I in this world? Who am I going to be during this shift? Am I going to be looking for what's going to happen from the outside, whether I'm excited about it or I feel like I'm, you know, attracting it or I'm afraid of it or I'm wondering what's going to happen with it? It could be any of those things. But is it coming from the outside or am I one with it? In other words, we can see ourselves as recipients or even as victims in a world in which we are vulnerable and temporal and the world is vast and solid. Or we can see ourselves, and in that case we're like the moon that's as far as it can get from the sun. Or we can see ourselves as connected with the sun, connected with the creator. Again, the creator is not the sun and the sun is not the creator, it's just an analogy. And knowing that we share one essence. And then we begin to look at the world as if we are shining down upon it. So here we have our earth, and we have all the people of the earth, and all of the beings on the earth. And the earth has a destiny. And the question then would be, if I am of the divine, what is it that I can do now? What is it that I can think? What is it that I can pray for? What is it that I can choose? What is it that I can teach? What is it that I can share? What is it that I can give? What is it that I can understand that will help illuminate the earth, that will help heal the earth? So it's like we are looking, we have the commandment, the divine commandment, the divine mission to do in this world, to interact with the world. But are we interacting from a place of separateness where here is the creator, here am I, here are the laws of nature, here's the world, it's a big bad place, I've got to make it in the world and I hope for help, but you know, it's after all a struggle? Or am I seeing myself as one with the creator, at least as a possibility, looking at the world as the raw material, like a canvas upon which I can paint something that is beautiful and divine? So that's one way to look at the difference here. But again, we talk about planting the seed. Planting a seed, a seed grows because it's the nature of the earth to grow a seed, to grow plants from seeds. But there's another way to plant the seed, and that is I'm fulfilling a divine potential here. I'm planting a seed, and I'm waiting to see what happens because I'm taking my role as a co-creator here. Not a co-creator simply to attract whatever, you know, whatever goodies I want in my life. I have no issue with goodies. I like them too. But when the world shakes, it's not necessarily time to focus only on that. It's time to focus on what am I here for and how can I tap into my true nature so that I can paint on this canvas, paint something beautiful, something holy and something eternal. So what is the difference? The difference in these two approaches is in the experience of what's called bitachon in Hebrew, bitachon, which means to trust. It means our relationship with the Creator. So when a person plants a seed from the perspective of I am relating one-to-one with the Creator, and he and I are making this seed grow. I am opening to that divine source to make the seed grow. So that, even though it will look from the outside like the same as any farmer planting a seed in any plot of earth, those two paths will separate more and more and more, depending on where you start from. So when a person feels that, you know, my spiritual growth is one thing, but after all, I live in a real world, and it's hard, and I have to struggle, and, you know, I'm all alone. So what will happen is life, because the person is relating to the universe, because his perspective is that the laws of nature kind of stand on their own. So here's God. Yes, there's a God. There's a creator. There are miracles, but after all, there are laws of nature and there are laws. So when a person relates to those laws as laws in that sense, relates to nature as something that's immutable, so then basically what happens is, like looking in a mirror, it says in the Zohar that the face that you show to the heavens is the face that the heavens shows to you. We, at this point, get to choose which game we want to play. When we play the game of Mamalakul Amin, the divine light that fills the worlds, so that is, then we are dependent, when we relate to those laws in that way, we are dependent upon those laws. We're limited to those laws. So in other words, when we hold back, when we sit in our timid self, when we allow ourselves to be in the habit, in the mental habit of separateness, so it is possible that, in fact, the laws of nature will be in the way. It's possible that they can be in the way. So in that case, if you want to be a very spiritual being, but, you know, it's a struggle, your life is a struggle, and you have to struggle to make a living, and you have to struggle, you know, in all kinds of ways. So it's possible that the more time you spend being spiritual, the less time you're going to have to actually do your work to succeed in the world. Or the more time you have to do your work to succeed in the world, the less time you'll have to be spiritual. But on the other hand, if you realize, if you take the stance, if you make the choice that regardless of how it looks, regardless of how it feels, I am going to move toward oneness. I am going to relate to the fact as a reality that there is nothing here but God. I'm still going to move forward in the world, but I'm going to do it from a different place. At that point, everything that you do becomes a divine service. So when you go out to work, you're serving God, you're relating to God, you're connecting to God. When you're involved in a relationship, it's a question of what are you offering? You and your Creator are one. You're united. What are you offering to this relationship? Whatever it is that you do, you're doing it not from the perspective of the earth is between me and the sun, my life is between me and the Creator, me and my divine source, but rather, here I am connected with my divine source, and now, what's next? Now, I want to go a little bit farther inside the text, and then we're going to sum up and see if there are any questions that we can answer. Before I go into the text, I want to say that I, from my own personal experience, this is not the easiest thing in the universe to do. Maybe far from it. I mean, depending on the time, sometimes it flows and sometimes it doesn't flow. I have a tendency to be easily shocked. So it's pretty easy for me to get shocked out of my path and shocked out of a sense of connection. So that's where I need to focus. That's where I need to focus. Each one of us in our own way. But what is it that we're committed to? Which path do we want to take? And I think that that's a question that, you know, that everybody has to ask themselves, or at least everybody has the opportunity to ask him or herself at this time. Because this is a cosmic birth process, and the world is not standing still. And so, you know, to quote Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, when Frodo was like, well, why do I have to be here now? And Gandalf said, We do not choose the time that we live in. We only choose how we are going to be or who we are going to be in that time. What are we going to do with those times? So these are the times before, right before, immediately before the metamorphosis. We're in the midst of the metamorphosis. We know where it's going, whether we always feel it or not. But who are we going to be in that metamorphosis? Are we going to be waiting, cowering in a corner? Or are we going to be bravely jumping off that cliff and using what we have in order to, in partnership with the one conscious creative source of us all, to paint a beautiful picture using our own unique brush strokes and singing our own unique song? What stance is it that we're going to take? So the difference between these two, I'm in the text again, the difference between these two behaviors doesn't start with something actual that you can see a difference. It doesn't start with the Yetzer Hara, with the that ego based inclination within us telling us at first to go to not do this. Like let me backtrack and explain this better. There are two different ways that we can move forward in this kind of divine service, in this kind of divine relationship. One of them is with trepidation. When we remain in a state of fear and hesitation, what happens is the rational mind says, okay, you know, maybe that would work. I'll just put my toe in. I'll try a little bit. It's like the caterpillar saying, you know, I'm going to stand here on the earth, but I'm going to see if I can flap those wings. What wings? I'm going to try a little bit, see if I can flap those wings and fly. That's not likely to work. What happens is that when we're stuck to the ground, we really don't have the ability to fly. When we're stuck to the way of being that we're used to, when we're stuck to that, to those laws of nature, even our own nature, especially our own nature, it's very, very, very challenging. It's really not, almost not possible to experience something new. So the way to, even if it looks like you're doing it, even if it looks like you're trying a new way, if you're in that consciousness of the caterpillar, you're not going to be able to fly. So what is the way in order? What is the secret to taking off? What's the secret to creating a new experience? What's the secret to tapping into your own inner light? To allow yourself to be moved, to allow yourself to go to a different space, to allow yourself to experience different things, to do it without the involvement of the rational mind. In other words, as it says in the text, it has to be a service, it has to be a level of being that is irrational, or rather, perhaps a better way to say it is super rational. The rational mind takes baby steps. The irrational or the unreasonable or the super rational mind says, I'm not in charge. I'm going to really just let go and see if I can fly. So this is a matter of, in a sense, sliding off or gliding off the cliff. It's not something that you can do halfway. The idea here is that we need to bypass that part of us that hangs on. We need to find a way to allow ourselves to be lifted by the wind. And the only way that can happen, and these are dramatic images and dramatic words, but again, it starts with a very, very small switch inside. Do I have to figure it out? Do I have to know how it's going to work? Yes or no? If yes, I'm a caterpillar. If no, I'm moving into being a butterfly. Do I have to have a certain amount of education, preparation, connection, whatever it might be in order to succeed? If yes, I'm a caterpillar. I'm stuck to the laws of nature. If no, I'm gliding into being a butterfly. So we can look at every aspect of our lives and ask ourselves, you know, am I going to be on this side of the fence or on this side of the fence? The fence can be a very, very, very thin, subtle line. It, again, might not look any different from the outside. It's what it is from the inside. Do I have to know, or am I willing not to know? Do I have to see how it's going to come out, or am I willing not to see how it's going to come out? I'm not going to tell you that it is an easy thing to, an easy switch to make. But what I can tell you is that the more consciously, the more willingly you or I, any of us, make that switch, the more consciously we're willing not to know, the more consciously we're willing to see what happens, the more consciously we're willing to allow our past not to equal our future, our habitual ways of thinking, our habitual ways of believing, not to influence the choices that we make in this next moment and in this next moment. You can't do this for the rest of your life. You can only do it for now, and for now, and for now, and for now, and for now. It's an action of opening rather than an action of hanging on. And that, I think, is the bottom line here. So this is the way that we can protect ourselves from being dragged back into the caterpillar mentality by making a commitment to ourselves that we're going out of the left brain. Not that we don't use it. You know, when you're driving a car, you want to use your left brain. When you're eating with a knife and fork, you want to make sure that you're not, you know, chewing on the knife. The left brain has its place. But the left, it's no longer the prerogative of a left brain that is a butterfly left brain to tell us what is not possible or what is definitely going to happen. That left brain needs to know. The left brain always has to have an opinion. And that opinion is usually based on habit, based on whatever we experienced in the past. The caterpillar functions from that always knowing, it's always the way it was, I'm stuck to the earth, I have my little legs, I'm grounded, I know what's going to happen, I know where I came from, I know where I'm going, it's not very far because I'm just a little caterpillar. The butterfly is an entirely different entity. In between the caterpillar and the butterfly is a state that Kabbalah would call bittul. which means an open-minded self, you could say self-nullification. What it means is an opening to something that I do not yet know. The problem, I think, for many of us is, I know that it's the problem for me often, that I can only imagine a future that's based on my past. I can only imagine accomplishing something if I already know how to do it. But that is a caterpillar way of being. Caterpillar walks step by step. That's what walking is all about. In order to accomplish, in order to lean into, in order to soar into, or in order to facilitate giving birth to a future that is not bound by the past, we have to have a different consciousness. We have to have a consciousness of not knowing. We have to know and be aware that we don't know. In the laws of nature, in this light that's called Mimalakal Amin, the light that fills all worlds, we know. We know when we drop something, it's going to fall. We know that the sun's going to rise, the sun's going to set. We know that there are people that, you know, with a lot of influence, and they're going to go and do what they're going to go and do, and I don't have any say about it. Whatever it might be that we know. But we know. We know like a caterpillar. When it comes to the laws of Sovyatkal Amin, here's the thing. The laws of Sovyatkal Amin are surrounding creation. And creation doesn't just mean this earth. It means all of the worlds, all of the universes, the worlds of angels, the worlds of souls, all of creations, all dimensions, surrounding and encompassing. It is the very creative energy of the source of all of creation, like a nuclear explosion and way beyond that. So if we allow ourselves not to know, if we allow ourselves, and this requires being present in the moment, because again, it's not something you can do forever. You can only do it now. And then you can do it now. And then you can do it now. And then you can do it now. In the moment. In the moment. I have a feeling. I have a challenge. I have a trigger. I have a high, whatever it might be. Now, what am I going to relate to? Am I going to relate to my past-based left brain fixed ways of thinking? Or am I going to open to not knowing? In other words, to drawing down more light. Because the more we're open to not knowing, the larger vessels we become for light that never came in the world before. Remember I said that a matrix event is, the matrix is the substance in which, the ocean in which we all swim, the substance that surrounds us and is of us, we are of it. A matrix event is a transformational event. Whatever it is that we happen to be feeling in our joint intention, we are jointly and individually, through our connection, vessels for ever-expanding light. So since we're interacting with a piece of the blueprint that is telling us that the final preparation for the metamorphosis, the final stage of transformation in the shift, that the pathway to that new being is through changing the paradigm through which we interact with reality, we could call it reality, with the matrix, through which we interact with the matrix. So since we know that, we are actually bringing that new possibility into our lives and into our world and into the world of everyone we touch and into the entire revealed part of creation. That means everywhere across the globe. So again, the caterpillar, the left brain, the past, I know how it's going to turn out. I'm stuck with things the way they are. I'm stuck with the way I always thought. I'm stuck with what I have now, and I'll make my choices accordingly. Usually the choices we make from that space of caterpillar, again, I'm talking about the negative because, you know, if you're already in a phase where you're flying forward, then it's good to know this because we can always fly more forward and expand more, and we're going from finite to infinite, so, you know, that's times infinity. And also the people around you are most likely not flying. But when we are in a state of stuckness or struggle, or even if sometimes we're in that state, we want to know what it's about and how we make that switch. So, caterpillar past, being stuck, old ways of thinking. And what happens when we're in stuck in those old ways of thinking, sorry, I got a little lost, is that we generally avoid new ways of being, new opportunities, new challenges. We generally resist our life. We resist our own feelings. We judge ourselves. We judge others. We get stuck in fear, and then we come up with all kinds of reasons for the fear. In other words, it's a place of a lot of stuckness. Caterpillar, little legs, walks on the earth, grounded. There's a comfort in it. Remember I said the ego resists change. You could put a lot of exclamation marks after that. The ego resists change with all its might. And that's true whether we see ourselves as struggling or whether we see ourselves as flying. Whatever, however we see ourselves, we tend to be stuck to it, very attached to it. The butterfly mentality, I'm just using, this is my analogy, the butterfly and the caterpillar here, just to help us understand, it doesn't mention that in the text. The butterfly mentality is the past does not equal the future. And I can only live and express in this moment because from the perspective of the light that surrounds, transcends the world, we are aware of the fact that the world is being recreated at every instant from infinite divine potential. Therefore, there is no past in the sense that we're stuck to it, and there is no future in the sense that we're stuck to it. It's only infinite now. And since we are not here to do nothing and just watch what happens, but we are here to connect with our essence, with our divine source, from both without and from within, and we're meant to act in concert with our divine purpose in the medium of our world, in our relationships, in our work, in our physical being, in everything that happens to us, everything we do. So in that moment of now and 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 now, what choice am I making? And 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 what choice am I making? What consciousness am I bringing in? What choice am I making? What conversation am I having within myself? What conversation am I having outside of myself? As we move deeper and deeper into the light. And those are, again, those two paths might look very, very similar at any given moment, particularly when you start. But as you move forward along the path, they diverge in bigger and bigger ways. And again, to put it in a very simple sense, we get to choose the rules. It's like there used to only be one game for most of us, one rules of the game. You know, you can have the beginner rules and the advanced rules. So we all played by the beginner rules, and there was no other choice. Laws of nature are the laws of nature, and there's nothing to do about it unless you're, you know, some kind of great saint or ascended master or tzaddik or whatever. Now that's no longer true because we are in the midst and moving toward the end of the metamorphosis because we're in the shift. But we're not all the way through the shift. So now, in this stage of increasing darkness, here's where we have the choice. By which rules are you going to play the game? The beginning rules, the beginner rules, or the advanced rules? And it will turn out in looking very, very different depending on which path you choose. So here's the good news. If you feel stuck, or if you feel like you just haven't been playing the game by the rules that you want to play it by, that's fine. There's no problem. Because the caterpillar is judgmental and beats itself up, the caterpillar mentality. The butterfly mentality is, even my resistance was part of my divine mission. Because it was created just for me by the Creator directly, and I'm one with the Creator, and we're in a constant dialogue, and we're moving forward together, and there's only love, and there's oneness. So now that I know that, how am I going to look at my former quote-unquote failures? How am I going to look at my caterpillar self? And if I'm feeling my caterpillar self right now, how am I going to look at my caterpillar self? So from the perspective of the butterfly self, there's compassion for the self. There's love for the self. Because what is your true nature? What's really happening here? When you're aware that you're not really a caterpillar, vulnerable, insufficient in this big, bad, hostile, shaky world, but you realize that you are a beautiful, beautiful butterfly being born. So how do you look at yourself? And that's also a choice, by the way. It's all a choice. Each moment, its own choice, as we move forward into the light, if we choose to do so. So we look at ourselves with compassion. We look at our former struggles with compassion. We look at our current struggles with compassion. What would change for you? And I'm asking you this right now to really look at it. What would change for you if you looked at yourself right now with deep compassion for your beauty and the beauty of your struggle? What if you were one with the Creator and you looked at yourself, your caterpillar self, and your butterfly self, knowing that it's one? And you looked at yourself with you honored yourself for coming down into this world, taking on this struggle, taking on this birth process. And you wanted to nurture yourself because it's so cosmically important. And you know that every time the caterpillar self pops up, it's simply another opportunity. Remember we said the purpose of every challenge and obstacle is to bring out hidden, miraculous powers of the soul. So there are two ways that the soul becomes revealed. There's the easy minor way and the harder major way. The easy minor way is we have a gift of light. We feel our soul. We feel that oneness. We feel that joy. We feel that bliss. Wonderful. We all love it. We want it. We always want it. But that brings out a certain level of the soul. That is not the deepest level. That's the light that's coming from outside. Remember, the light that shines, you're the moon. The light that shines on you from the sun, when the sun is shining most brightly, you are farthest away from the sun. You're farthest away from your own essence. You're just feeling the light, not feeling the essence at that time. The earth is between you and the sun. If you can visualize this astronomically, when there's struggle, doesn't mean we have to experience struggle in the same way. That's the thing. It can change the way that we experience struggle by looking at it with compassion, with acceptance, with not knowing, with connecting deeper. And then even the struggle can become far more smooth. And the light that we experience, by the way, it's not because it's not the light that's coming from the outside, because when you're right up close and personal with your essence, when the moon and the sun are touching, you could say kissing, connecting, the light of the sun's not shining on the moon. They're just connecting. It's not about light. In order for light to shine, there must be a space of darkness between the one that's receiving the light and the source of the light. But when essence touches essence, there's no space there. There's oneness. So as a new discovery, as a new experience, I invite you to step into this new experience, understanding that it only unfolds one moment at a time in the present moment, understanding that it comes from the future, not from the past. The light of the future is an unknown light, unknown to us, because it's from the future. And by definition, that means we didn't have it before. So it's unfamiliar? Of course. Of course it's unfamiliar. When you deal with something unfamiliar, the instinct of the ego, of the caterpillar self, is to cling to the past, to make it familiar again. Wait, I'm not holding on. I got to hold on. I'm losing it. Everything feels weird. But the unfamiliar light can be looked at in another way. It's unfamiliar. It's coming from my essence. Coming in a different way. And now what choice do I make? And even if the choice is simply to look upon yourself with compassion and to say an open-hearted receiving prayer. Prayer is a huge thing. Prayer is related to not knowing. Prayer brings something new, especially if it's coming from the proper place, from a listening and from a connecting. Prayer brings new light into you from a higher source, and often from the very source of creation. So even there as a start, silently within yourself, you can embark from that place upon a whole new path, a path toward oneness. And when there's a hurricane, you know, a caterpillar can get tossed about a bit. Massive trees with deep roots can fall. People who lived through Sandy saw that. Oceans can rise. If you're a butterfly, what happens? you just let the wind lift you. And if it lifts you high enough, you barely even feel the wind. And that is the choice that we have at this time. And that is what this time is all about. So I think we're going to conclude because we're getting closer to the top of the hour. I did not do much in the text, so it's a bit new for me. But I think we're going to, there are a lot of comments coming in through the webcast. So I'm not sure. Oh, there's so many. There are hundreds or close to. I don't know how many. I don't know if it's gonna. If it's a good idea to read through these and take questions. But Just give me a moment just to scan here. Okay. Sorry about this for the silence. I think that I'm not going to answer questions because there are just too many comments and questions here, and I'm hearing that buzz on the line. I'm a little nervous to open up the line. But what I want to do now instead is, and by the way, feel free to write me to send me in questions if you like by email and or comments. And I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to be doing in the future, But I do know that we're going to be doing more of these calls. I'm not sure on what schedule yet. So we can bring questions into the beginning of the next call, or perhaps I'll find some forum with which to answer them. Anyway, we'll leave that for now. But what we want to do, I think, at this point is to connect again. We've brought a lot of fears, struggles, love, light, new possibilities, old possibilities, stuckness, openness. We've brought a lot out of the matrix into our awareness. And I think that I would like to join with everybody, with your permission, and conclude with a little bit of a prayer healing session. So once again, please join me and simply breathe. And breathe in all that has come up for you tonight, today, wherever you are in the world. It's night for me here. I know it's morning in California. It's tomorrow in Australia. Whatever time it is. Just breathe in everything that's come up for you. Allow it to kind of float around in your awareness, whatever form it takes. So breathing, I'm going to leave a space of a few seconds of quiet just so we can all breathe. And as you're breathing, be aware again that we're all breathing together. As the air leaves my lungs, it literally goes into the air that someone else is breathing and someone else's breath goes into me. And that core Kiuli energy, that divine light that is the source of all things, all ideas, all reality, all spiritual, all physical, stars, galaxies, cosmos, angels, souls, bodies, plants, rocks, humanity, divinity. It's all one in Udma Bando. There's nothing else but the Creator, you and me, the Creator in a costume, beneath the caterpillar self. Is that creative energy, that Creator. Breathing in and out all together, aware of our connection, and asking in a prayer, and again, the kind of prayer we want to connect to, is what I call an open-hearted listening prayer. It's not a prayer of self-judgment. It's not a prayer of constriction. It's a prayer of receiving something new, of inviting. And I am, with your permission, on behalf of all of us together, on behalf of all of the worlds that we represent, that we're connected to, inviting and receiving and asking and requesting the divine, the creator, the source of all there is to be with us in our space, to enter into all of the bright spots and all of the dark spots as we invite in that divine source, as we invite the creator into every aspect of our lives. We open up for new things to happen. We open up to that light of Sovet Kol Almin, that transcendent light that never manifested in the world as of yet. We're inviting it to manifest. We are asking the Creator as our partner, as our source, to help us to connect to that deepest essence of ourselves where we are one, and to do it in the right way, in a way that is MS. That is truth. Truth. To do it in a way that is present. To do it in a way that is opening to receive. To receive smoothly and gently. To receive gracefully and powerfully. To receive in a way that is straight. That doesn't veer off course. That doesn't reinforce the caterpillar, but rather that brings wind under the wings of the butterfly. And I want to invite each of you to add quietly to yourselves, but on behalf of all of us, your own open-hearted, receiving, listening prayer to receive the light of Sovet Kol Almin in a way of gracefulness and smoothness of healing and health, of pleasantness, of blessing and protection, of support, of gentle breezes, of seeing and hearing in a new way, of being channels for flow of new light that never came in the world before. And that we have ultimate compassion upon ourselves, and that we're able to see ourselves and each other from the perspective of our divine source, our own inner essence, with love and compassion. With astonishment and deep gratitude. With awe for the beauty that exists within each and every courageous, struggling, human and divine being that each of us is at this time, on this planet, in this critical, unprecedented time of new birth. We'll keep continuing to breathe. Inviting in, I don't want to say anchoring in, because the butterfly doesn't anchor. The butterfly is, but inviting in, allowing the new light and the new consciousness to lift us, to hold us, It is when you feel that you're at the edge, at the end, that you have no more, that there is no more, that you need to just take that next step forward in the now, in this moment, this moment, this moment, with compassion for your humanity and openness to your essence, and not knowing what's next and how it's going to feel and how it's going to be. And as we can, as we do that together, we can be sure that new things will happen and miraculous things will happen, and that we will continue to expand to a deeper and far more brilliant divine light. And with that, I'm going to say goodnight to everybody, and thank you so much for your participation. And I welcome your feedback. If you want to email me or your questions. And one last prayer, that we be lifted up and that this be an easy birth and a joyful birth. And wherever there is constriction, that we see it simply as just a little bit of extra pressure to squeeze that liquid out of our wings so that we can truly fly. Blessings to everyone. Good night.